What if the fact that you're wanting to get there so badly is the one thing that's preventing you from getting there at all?
I know firsthand that when you're raising a challenging, reactive, or aggressive dog, that life isn't all unicorns and rainbows. But I also know that it helps to hear other people's stories. My name is Kajsa van Overbeek, and on this podcast, we share stories of the force-free training journeys of amazing dogs who are just a little rough around the edges.
Hi everyone. The other day I was thinking about the parallels between flying and our lives with our dogs. And you're probably going to go like, wait, what? But let me tell you a story and I hope you'll bear with me to see what I mean. What I was thinking about is something that we are warned of as pilots, like from the get-go, whether you're a private pilot like me or an airline pilot or whatnot. And one of the things is a phenomenon called get there-itis. And I think it's really the official name for it. If you look at AOPA accident reports and things like that, there's that term, get there-itis. And if you look it up on Wikipedia, it actually says the determination of a pilot to reach a destination even when conditions for flying are very dangerous. In technical terms, a form of plan continuation bias. And then on some other websites, I found someone describing it as this infectious disease, which every pilot has had, is one of the most deadly in all of aviation. And here it comes. It cripples the pilot's ability to think clearly and pushes him or her to do things they wouldn't otherwise have done. So what does that look like practically speaking? Well, just to give you an example, flying into inclement weather. So let's exaggerate everything a little bit. I love doing that. So let's say it's Christmas Eve and you're flying your little tiny plane home. And you think, well, the weather, it looked kind of iffy, but, you know, like if I'm lucky, I can get there. And then you're en route and you see that, you know, the cloud base is a little bit lower than you thought it would be. And there's a little bit more wind and maybe there's some other stuff going on weather-wise as well. But you think, it's Christmas Eve. Come on. I think it'll be fine. I mean, like I said, I would turn around if the cloud base got to 1,000 feet and it's 900. So, I mean, like, really, what's the difference between 1,000 and 900? It's like, it's nothing. And it's Christmas Eve. I'm just gonna get home. And so you keep on flying. And then maybe a little tiny something on your little tiny plane breaks on top of you already flying a little bit lower than you thought you would because you wanted to get home because it's Christmas Eve. And so you're a little stressed because, you know it's not like 100% great what you're doing. And then now this little thing breaks down. Maybe it's just a warning light or maybe something that's not working properly. Normally not a big thing, but it just adds another layer of stress to whatever's already going on. And then it all goes downhill from there. So this thing, the get there-itis, we're being warned of it because it creeps in so sneakily. It's just sort of a pileup of tiny decisions that in themselves wouldn't probably lead to anything major. But all the little, I want to say mistakes, even though that's maybe not the word that I'm looking for, but all the little mistakes combined can have like a pretty bad effect. And I think like, let me read you what one of the sites says also. It says, one bad decision leading to another bad decision, leading to an even worse decision, and inevitably ending with severe consequences. All right, sounds bad. But I just want to bring that back to life with our dogs for a little bit. Because I sometimes get a feeling that we have the get there itis with our dogs as well. Like we, especially us with our challenging dogs, we somehow really want them to fit into that mold of the perfect dog. We want them to not lunge, to not bark, like to be different or better, whatever that may be, from where they are now. You know, we want it to be Christmas Eve. And so we train and train, and we don't even really see what it's costing us anymore. Because that's another thing of the get there itis, or the other term for it is plan continuation bias, is once we're set on a course, once we've invested something, we have a really hard time of letting that go. You know, like once we've put time, effort, or money into something, we don't want to stop because we'll consider that sort of a loss of our money, time, effort. So once we're on the training train, that too, like we've invested all this time, all this money probably too, in training our dogs into this dog, into life with our dogs, because we want to get there. We want to get to that better place, and we don't want to give up the investment that we've made, but we don't see what it's costing us. So we don't see that it's maybe costing us our human relationships, that it's causing us stress, so that it's costing us our health, that it's costing us the relationship with our dog. Like the fun that we were having with our dog now becomes, we have to train this, we have to train this, we have to make this better. And I always wonder, what is it that we expect to get when we're there? Like in the pilot and the plane example, it's like we expect to have, you know, a nice Christmas Eve with our family. That's what we want. That's what we're expecting, the happiness and all of that. But when we keep on piling mistake off, on mistake, then what will happen is we won't end up there for Christmas dinner. We'll probably end up in a plane crash. Now, I don't want to make it that dramatic with our dogs, but if we only keep thinking like we have to get there, we have to get there because that's where it'll be better, that's where life with our dog will be great, then maybe we'll end up in a proverbial plane crash with our dog as well, with maybe with our family. Maybe it will cost us, like I said, our relationships. Is that worth it? And I just want to bring that back to flying again. When we were taught about this get there itis, we were given a couple of scenarios, like by our instructor, and one of them was also like we were getting into not so great weather. It was, everything was looking a bit iffy. We didn't know if we could make it back to our home airport. We didn't know really if we could make it to the other airport. So our instructor said, okay, so now what? What do you do in this situation? And all of us were coming up with ideas like, well, I don't know, like maybe, I don't know, call the tower, or if we're in a radio controlled airspace, maybe we can, you know, like ask them to do something. We're trying to rack our brains to come up with something. And our instructor said, well, why don't you just make a precautionary landing? And a precautionary landing is where, I mean, you can make one at an airport, but you can also put your little plane down. You can tell I'm a private pilot, right? I'm not an airline pilot. But you can put your plane down in a field somewhere. And, you know, like you're trained to do that. You're trained to how, you know, how to execute a precautionary landing in let's say pasture or something like that. And you can make a pretty safe landing that way. And the only crappy thing about it will be, well, you're not in an airport and you're going to have to call someone and there's some paperwork and hassle stuff and things to do. But you walk away alive and usually with your plane intact. And none of us would ever like really like come up with that answer. At least I didn't come up with the answer. My fellow students didn't. And it's like all of us are going like, wait, you can do that? That's a thing, you know? And it reminds me of the text of like get the writers, it cripples the pilot's ability to think clearly and pushes him or her to do things they wouldn't otherwise have done. It's like, you get tunnel vision. You don't even think out of the box anymore. Like, why would you continue flying into something that could kill you if you could just take a break? And of course your brain is going to come up with all kinds of obstacles, like it's not an airport, it's not this, it's not that. But it's better than, you know, being dead. And now with our dog, so of course it isn't that bad. It isn't that, like, you know, we're gonna end up somewhere terrible, hopefully. But still, sometimes it's kind of nice to go like, hey, we can make a precautionary landing. We can maybe interrupt our training. We can maybe hit the brakes and rethink and just sort of get out of our tunnel vision, out of our like one-way street, maybe take an exit somewhere and rethink things. We can go like, wait, can you do that? Yes, you can. You can take a break. You don't have to get there, because there isn't necessarily better than here. If you keep wanting to get there, you might get nowhere. You might, like I said, end up damaging your relationships, whether with your loved ones, yourself, or your dog. Anytime that you feel yourself thinking that there is somehow better than here, that's where I would now put up a red flag and go like, red flag, hey, be careful. You can be just as happy here as you can be there. Trust me, if your dog is perfectly trained, you will have other problems. Other stuff will come up for you. Why not enjoy the here? If you wouldn't be suffering from tunnel vision, what could you have if you just looked around you? Like, what would be available to you from just looking around in your close vicinity? What's there? You can say, look, you don't get it. My dog needs to stop barking in order for me to enjoy my life. But I'm telling you that your dog's barking is not the problem. It's what you make it mean. And I'm saying that because, you know, like, if you couldn't hear your dog barking, you wouldn't have a problem probably with your dog barking, aside from the fact that maybe you care about like their emotional health and you think like if they're barking, that probably means that they're afraid and then all of that. But again, what you're doing there is being stressed about your dog because you are afraid of their emotional well-being. And when you're afraid like that, when you're stressed like that, you generally don't make the best decisions. Again, it's the same as with the pilots. Like when stress piles upon stress piles upon stress, like one bad decision piles upon bad decision piles upon bad decision, then at one point your capacity for thinking clearly and for making decisions is diminished because so much of your brain is occupied with, you know, the consequences of the prior bad decisions. If you're having tunnel vision about getting there, or if you're stressed about your dog's emotional state and your lack of progress and your lack of speed of getting to the destination, and all your brain's computing power is going there, you have nothing left to think about how you could make life with your dog better in the moment. Like, what's even the point of trying to get to the destination if all it's gonna do is end up with you in a crash? Wouldn't it just be better to look at the options that are available to you here? Or wouldn't it be better to make a precautionary landing, to just pause and take inventory and get moving again when circumstances are better? What if the fact that you're wanting to get there so badly is the one thing that's preventing you from getting there at all? So this is my invite to you to take inventory of the fact, or to consider that, what if you can't make Christmas Eve dinner, if you had to stay grounded or make that precautionary landing, If you took off the blinders, if you no longer had tunnel vision, what could you come up with to make Christmas Eve still be a success? In other words, if you weren't worried about getting somewhere with your dog training and you would stay exactly where you are, if you looked around you, if you look closely at your relationship with your dog and your loved ones, what could you come up with to make something awesome out of it, to throw a party, to have Christmas Eve dinner now?
You can find a link to the website with the show notes through either Instagram at the Rough Cattle Dog or through our Facebook group with the same name as the podcast, Rough Around the Edges. If you would like to come on the show and share your story with us, then you can also contact me through either of these channels. And last but not least, if you like listening to this podcast, then maybe consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Spotify, or any of the other platforms that you may be listening to this podcast on, because they help us get found in the listings, allowing us to reach more people and help them feel less alone.